Hey there, you're listening to the Wednesday Conversation. I'm Mike Kresnick, and I'm here with Pastor Bob Thune and Chris Hemmelman of Coram Deo Church. And every Wednesday we sit down to talk about how the gospel of Jesus Christ connects to the questions and issues of everyday life. And today our topic is fetal tissue research in Nebraska.
You didn't see that coming, did you?
No.
Obviously, one of the big issues in our culture over the past month or so has been the release of a number of videos, about one a week, from the Center for Medical Progress in California. These undercover videos, which I'm sure many listeners have watched, are interviews with various executives in Planned Parenthood, revealing some of the very wicked practices that go on related to the selling of fetal tissue for profit, and even bringing to light questions like, are the procedures for abortions being changed in light of trying to preserve certain body parts that then are financially beneficial to the abortion clinic as they sell those parts for research? So that's raised a whole host of important questions culturally. I'm glad that there's a lot of people talking about this. I'm glad that there's a lot of people who are upset by it. I think as Christians, we need to be upset by this kind of thing. And someone, a friend of mine, texted me just this morning an article. This is on livewellnebraska.com, and it's an article that was just posted this morning from a World Herald staff writer. The link is titled UNMC Proud of Its Fetal Tissue Research, and it's revealing the fact that the University of Nebraska Medical Center does a lot of fetal tissue research. It's ranked 14th highest among the 97 institutions that receive federal funding for projects that include some use of fetal tissue. And the article is basically saying, yeah, in light of the Planned Parenthood thing, this is on the radar again, but UNMC officials say they're proud of the research they're doing. And so we want to have a conversation about this. We want to talk about how should we feel about fetal tissue research happening in our own city? How, as Christians, should we engage this? And my hope is actually to provoke some of our listeners. There's a lot of people within Coram Deo and other churches that work at UNMC that are even in administration and leadership at UNMC. And I think this is an issue we need to start thinking about. How do we engage this in our city? So here's the fuzzy lines. Not all fetal tissue is from aborted fetuses. There are ways to obtain fetal tissue in other ways that are not ethically dangerous. But no one who does this kind of research will disclose whether the tissues they're working with are coming from aborted fetuses or not. That is shrouded in a lot of secrecy, and anytime that question is asked, it's sort of demurred and avoided. This article doesn't reveal whether UNMC is gaining any of this fetal tissue from potentially aborted fetuses, but the question mark about that is rather an important question mark. In addition, the other challenging ethical issue here is the question of, is this research useful at all? Everybody who wants to defend this research says, hey, fetal tissue research can lead to cures for diseases. In fact, the headline of this article is, UNMC officials say fetal tissue research could soon produce groundbreaking Parkinson's treatment. And so it's always held up as a, hey, we're pursuing cures to diseases, and if we weren't able to do this research, we wouldn't be able to make progress in this. And that's a dangerous kind of moral argument that we'll talk more about as we go on the podcast. But I think at the very least, we should be provoked and disturbed that rather than having a careful ethical conversation about this in our city, UNMC seems to be saying, rah, rah, we're using fetal tissue, and you should be happy about that.
I think another ethical concern here is for researchers who maybe are committed to, as you said, working to find cures, whether it be Parkinson's. I think there were a couple other things mentioned in the article, like dementia. So let's say I'm a researcher, and I am committed to working to cure these diseases, but yet I have strong values related to abortion, fetal tissue research. Do I just give up the fight if the funding that I'm receiving, that the direction of research is all heading in this direction? What do I do? Do I fight for other methods, or do I quit my job at a very well-funded research hospital. And so I think that was another one of the questions that our friend sent. If I'm a researcher, how should I think about these things? And so if you happen to be a researcher that is listening to this podcast and you have some of these dilemmas, tweet us, right? I know this isn't the end of the podcast.
Talk about it on Twitter.
But we would love to hear. Yeah, we would love to hear. We would love to hear that. But I thought that was an interesting thing, too, for the people actually doing this research.
Well, the way this usually goes is there's a lead researcher who's usually a high-level MD or PhD who's sort of overseeing the research, and there's a whole team of researchers working on a particular project. And so the ethical dilemma this could raise is I'm on this research team. I don't get to choose how we do the research or where the cells come from. I'm just charged with some little piece of that research, and yet I'm in a sense implicated in that whole project by the fact that that my boss is choosing to use tissue from that could be from aborted fetuses. So this is I think I'm concerned for a couple reasons. One, I'm concerned for how we engage the conversation in our city. I'd at least like to see an article that could be written that could ask the question, hey, should we have any ethical issues with this? Instead of one that's just sort of, this is almost like a propaganda piece for UNMC's research. It doesn't seem to be a good piece of journalism that says, hey, are there ethical issues here? Let's talk to some people who are concerned about that. Let's give a balanced story that maybe asks some tough questions. This piece reads just more like propaganda for fetal tissue research. So that's one concern is how do Christians help press a conversation that at least gets the city asking deeper questions here? That would be an easy starting point. I think the much bigger questions relate to, for those who are actually engaged in this kind of research or those who are in leadership at places like UNMC, what does a Christian worldview commit me to in those kinds of situations?
Can I be provocative and kind of throw a bomb in this question? I don't know how helpful to go this extreme right away.
Blow it up, Chris.
I just want to go here.
Bernie Sanders.
Yeah.
Go Bernie Sanders.
So if I have issues with this type of research, what morally is different between this argument and the argument that perhaps Nazi Germany scientists, yes, I dropped the N-word, Nazi, shut down all debate. But in all seriousness, this argument of, is it okay to experiment on human beings? I mean, we have labels on our shampoo bottles that said not tested on animals. Like, we have this very kind of strong ethical dilemma related to animal testing on certain products. Is it okay to test on humans? Is it okay to do these kinds of experiments on humans, to use fetal cells? And so my argument, this is the cells from murdered humans, if we're talking about aborted babies. So in my mind, this argument is no different than the argument that a Nazi scientist, or I don't know, pick any other evil group that does experiments on people, justifying the ends, justify the means. And so what's the difference?
Well, unfortunately, I'm not going to disagree with you here, because I think that's exactly my frustration for Christians who engage these conversations. Is I don't feel like there's any Christians pounding the table and saying, hey, this is just wrong. Everybody always wants to go like, well, what about the medical benefits that come from it? And aren't these babies getting aborted anyway? And so the fact that we didn't use their tissues for research doesn't save their lives. And so does it, you know, we get in all these, we pretend like it's a gray area, when the beautiful thing about moral issues is they tend to be very stark in many cases. And I think no one's willing to just draw a line and say, yeah, if it comes from a human, we shouldn't experiment with it. We shouldn't be using it for research. Now, maybe you and I have stronger convictions there. Maybe I'd love to hear from some people who would want to make a different kind of argument. But I do think it's a little frustrating to feel like Christians have lost the moral courage to say, hey, yeah, let's not go there. We can, with the progress of science and research, there's a million other ways we can pursue cures for important diseases that don't have to involve fetal tissue research. Science is growing and changing and progressing every single day, and there's all kinds of new things that are always being discovered. And so I'm not convinced that if we don't have fetal tissue, we will never find a cure for Parkinson's or for AIDS or for cancer.
That's what's frustrating about this article, is that if you're against fetal research, you must be against advancement in science and finding cures for Parkinson's and Alzheimer's and all this stuff that they claim it that it helps fix.
Let's talk about the philosophical argument or the philosophical worldview that's reflected here, because I think it's important. You mentioned it a minute ago, Chris. The worldview that's being expressed here is a form of utilitarianism, which is the greatest good for the greatest number makes it okay. Or as you said, the ends justify the means. A utilitarian ethic says, well, to figure out if something's right or wrong, let's determine what potential benefit could come out of it versus what's the potential risk of it or the downside of it. And if we can see potential benefit or utility coming from this decision, that makes it right. The ends justify the means, because maybe we'll find a cure, and therefore that the fact that that's out there justifies whatever we could want to do, you know, with this kind of research. Utilitarianism is always a slippery slope, because the question is, at what point do the ends not justify the means? And you bring up Nazi Germany, which I think to people feels like a flashpoint, but that's exactly, you know, these kinds of arguments, if you take them forward and ask what could someone with less of a moral conscience do with this, that's exactly where you end up. It was a very utilitarian argument. Now, we can look back and say it was racist, it was ugly. But in the minds of the Nazis, it very much was, well, the ends, the furthering of a pure Aryan race and the Germanic people justifies the means of whatever we could want to do with people who aren't of that race. And so when you want to say, well, we don't agree with the Nazis, but we do agree with fetal tissue research, the question I want to press is, well, it's the same ethic being applied either place. Now, I'm glad that you have a stronger conscience to stop short of genocide, or at least you think you do. But I would argue abortion is the same thing as genocide. Mm-hmm. No one's willing to say it that way. But these videos are revealing more and more. It's hard to watch anything related to abortion these days and not realize, yeah, that's a human being. You can say whatever you want about it being a tissue, a bundle of tissue, or an embryo, or a fetus. It's a human. And so that argument starting to win the day more and more. So arguably using the same ethic of utilitarianism, saying, well, yeah, we wouldn't want to kill adult humans, but we'll take cells from aborted babies and do research on them. The problem there is what the argument's based on in the first place.
And to add to what you're saying, part of the argument too, I think when people try to distinguish between what Nazi Germany did and what this is that the people, there was a personhood attached to the people that they were experimenting on. And so the argument is, yes, the fetus is human, but it's not a person. So it's a less of a person, or the personhood aspect.
Man, that sounds
there.
A lot like the Dred Scott decision, doesn't it?
Yeah. And so it's
a slave is only 3/5 of a person.
Exactly. Exactly. It's the same kind of argument. In the minds of Nazi Germany, those they were experimenting on were less of a person. And so it's the same type of reasoning, same types of argument. And so maybe the sense of you have a fully grown human being physically in front of you makes that a little bit more obvious. But the fact of the matter is, it's the same argument. It comes down to a personhood. Does a human being have intrinsic value regardless of what level of development they are as a person? Or do we start creating this very arbitrary sense of who has a right to live and who doesn't based upon their development as a quote unquote person? And so that's a very scary thing, because you start following down that road, then you start making judgments about who is worthy to be alive. And so you think of people with severe mental handicaps. Are they a person? Their cognitive function may not be up to par. So does that mean that because of that, they're less of a person? That's a scary world too. So I think there's a lot of implications that people don't want to go down those roads, but that essentially is what they're doing.
Well, and this whole debate with the Planned Parenthood videos has really raised a lot of those kinds of questions of people are having to confront the fact that what we essentially are doing in a lot of our vague conversation about things like fetal tissue research is, and even the existence of fetal tissue research. Now, I want to say scientifically, I'm not denying the fact that perhaps fetal tissue provides a unique kind of specimen or starting point for research. Okay, so there's if it wasn't scientifically beneficial, no one would be pressing to use it. So I'm not trying to say, hey, there's not a this doesn't have any value scientifically. But I am pressing the utilitarian argument that says that equals it's okay to use it. That's where we want to be able to draw a line. And what's happening with these Planned Parenthood videos is that we're having to confront the fact that a lot of I read a columnist a week or two ago who said basically abortion, the industry of abortion, has created a market for fetal tissue. If you did not have abortion, you would not have availability of fetal tissue. And so if you wanted to do fetal tissue research, you'd have to ask the question, well, how are we going to get fetal tissue? And it'd be hard to get. As it is, when we're aborting 55 million human beings since 1973, there's fetal tissue out there that someone needs to do something with. And so this columnist is making the point that the reason people make arguments of why this research is so important is that if you really trace the money and trace how the market got created, it's a byproduct of abortion. Mm-hmm. And that should scare any Christian who has a moral conscience, because I think it's easy to read these articles and sort of start from the end and work backwards and say, well, this fetal tissue research is producing good scientific discoveries, so why wouldn't we want to do it? Instead of starting from the other side and asking, how did we get to the place where we're doing fetal tissue research in the first place? Where does fetal tissue come from? This article is revealing in that it says in the third to last paragraph, controversy erupted in 1999 when it was disclosed that Dr. Gendelman had been using fetal tissue in his research, something the university had not previously disclosed. It led for calls from abortion opponents to end the research, but the NU Board of Regents voted unanimously to support the research. What's interesting to me about that is that's 16 years ago, and there's a controversy just by the fact that fetal tissue is being used, and rightly so. But now the place we are is where an article like this can get published that's saying, yay, fetal tissue research, and we're just supposed to sort of read it and be happy about UNMC and its scientific advances instead of asking the question, what are we talking about here, and how did we get to this place in the conversation?
Bob, you said Christians should be scared. What did you mean by that?
In the same way, I think that that we saw in Nazi Germany of Christians having to confront what is our government actually do? What does our culture actually come to? It's that's what I'm talking about. This sense of it's easy to rationalize abortion because we've all grown up in a world where it exists and it just is. And so it's sort of, you know, we've sort of not made peace with it in a moral sense, but it's the world we live in. And there's a sense of like, well, this is reality in our world. But I think that the more we make peace with things like that, the less things tend to shock us. And the less I think there's outrage and the less we tend to ask the question, man, what are actually the moral implications of what we're doing? And so I'm saying, I think this should scare us in the sense of making us ask the question, what has legalized abortion in this country created? It's created a world where there's fetal body parts for sale. That's not, you know, what's being revealed in those Planned Parenthood videos isn't, there's, you know, this came out of nowhere. What's being revealed is at some point abortionists started saying, gosh, we have a lot of fetal body parts. What can we do scientifically with it? You know, that market came about somehow. There's a need for us to ask the question, how did we get here? And what is a Christian response to this look like? Is it just, well, this is the world we live in? Or do we need to start asking hard questions of, man, have we been as vocal and as active and as courageous and as thoughtful as we need to be in pressing these issues in our culture and in really developing a wise prophetic voice to these issues?
And here, I think, as Christians, we have an opportunity to champion and value life based on the fact that we are created in the image of God. And this kind of thing, this fetal tissue research, I think is part of a larger piece of our culture that essentially treats humans as a commodity. I mean, we've made ourselves a commodity. So whether it's this kind of research, whether it's the way that we indulge sexually, the intrinsic value of a human being because they're created in the image of God has been repeatedly debased in our culture. And it just seems like we're falling further and further down that slope. Now, throughout the history, because of sin, throughout the history of our world, we've seen this. So I'm not saying that we're unique in any way. But I think for American culture, and then you think of our city, for the church to stand up and push back against this, because we have such a strong view of the fact that humans are made in the image of God, we do have intrinsic value because of that. And then even if you think of like issues of like equality and freedom, this kind of thing, like I said earlier, starts to open doors for haves and have-nots. Who gets to live, who doesn't? Who has value in society based on their perceived personhood, and who doesn't? So this is a justice issue too, in the sense that we're standing up for the weak and the oppressed and those who have been deemed as not having value. So on a number of levels, as you said, Bob, the church can speak prophetically and champion life based out of our biblical convictions and start to point out to the culture, hey, you're debasing humanity. You're making us a commodity. And that's a very scary thing. The implications of that are very scary.
So let's talk about the question you asked earlier, Chris. What should an individual Christian do mm-hmm. in various situations? Mm-hmm. Because that's where it gets challenging and fuzzy. And where I generally want to leave a lot of room for freedom of conscience and say, man, you need to pray. You need to seek counsel from the community that's around you. What's the right thing to do in any given situation? Sometimes it's hard to discern. But I want to suggest in this scenario a couple of things. One, I think for the church to have the prophetic voice that you're talking about, it's going to take some individual Christians standing up and saying, hey, I'm willing to lose my career over this. This is a big enough issue that it's not just a, oh, let me pray with my pastor about it for a week and I have a little speed bump in my conscience, but rather like I'm willing to fight and go to the mat for this question, and I'm willing to be the lightning rod for this issue. So I want to suggest that maybe it's going to take a Christian in this research department standing up and saying, this isn't right. I'm not willing to go with this. I want to be transferred to a different research department. I want to be put on a different team. It might take an administrator at UNMC or a regent at the university standing up and saying, hey, let's revisit this conversation. This is not okay. Let's talk about it. It might take a Christian who has Parkinson's disease saying, I'm not willing to be cured at the expense of fetal tissue research. Mm. And I say that because that's the kind of conviction that I think the gospel gives us. The fact that the gospel removes the fear of death means that being cured of a disease is not the end all. I'm still going to die. Like, even if I get cured of Parkinson's or AIDS or cancer, I still have a shelf life, right? Like, I'm only living a certain number of years and I'm going to die eventually. And so when the fear of death is removed, it gives a certain amount of moral courage to say, maybe this could help me in some way, but I'm not willing to be helped if it means questionable moral scenarios that violate not only my conscience, but just moral goodness in the universe. And I say that as a man who has an aunt with Parkinson's disease, and so has seen it destroy her body and seen her longing for different types of treatments that will delay the effects of that disease, but also a woman with a strong moral conscience who I think would say exactly what I'm saying of, hey, there's a limit to what kind of treatment I'm willing to receive, because at the end of the day, Jesus is better than me being healed from my Parkinson's. Hmm. I want to tease out one other worldview implication in this article from Tom O'Connor, the spokesman of UNMC. I hope that Tom is listening to this podcast, which I don't think he is. I've never heard of him, but his quote says this: research involving fetal cells has led to tremendous advancements in developing treatments for a range of diseases. That's why many of the nation's leading research institutions, including the University of Nebraska, are responsibly engaged in this type of research, which, for whatever journalist wrote this article, that's straight off a press release. Tom O'Connor did not say that in an interview. That's a press release from the UNMC that just got reprinted in this article, and Henry J. Cordes at the World Herald ought to own that as not the same thing as responsible journalism. However, what's interesting to me is that line, tremendous advancements. Because again, what it betrays is it's not just a utilitarian ethic, but it's a certain narrative of progress, which is, well, as long as we're advancing, mm-hmm. progress justifies everything, and advancing just and the notice the progress we're after here. The progress is after a cure for diseases, including Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, AIDS, dementia. So progress equals by the unlimited potential of science and of the human ingenuity, we're going to reach a place where we can eradicate these diseases and make life better for everyone. And so to get back to sort of the question you were phrasing, Mike, I would just want to question that narrative of progress and say, does progress mean research at all costs and trying to solve the ills in the world at all costs? Or does it mean embracing a worldview that includes suffering? Does it mean teaching people to suffer well? Does it mean embracing that the world is broken and that there may be diseases that we don't find a cure to? That doesn't, I don't want to give up on trying to find cures, because I think God made us to find cures to diseases, and part of Christian work in the world is to act and live redemptively and solve all the problems we can for the good of humanity. So I'm not trying to be a give up kind of person here. But it's interesting that there's this narrative of progress that's always embedded in these kinds of stories that says, well, progress is happening, and so don't question it. You know, if we're making advances, if we're advancing, then there's, you know, that justifies whatever. And G.K. Chesterton, one of my favorite writers, who died maybe 100 years ago, has this line that says, progress is a word that is meaningless unless we agree on where we're trying to progress to. So the word progress only has meaning if we share an agreement on where we're trying to get. And so when you see the word progress used or advancement used, what it's implying is a worldview that embraces some end for that. And so that's where Christians can enter meaningfully into the debate and say, what are we progressing toward? Where are we trying to get to? Is it utopia? Is it heaven on earth? Is it a humanist paradise where we've solved all the problems in the world? Or does progress mean bettering life for people in a realistic way that still embraces a world that's full of brokenness and suffering and pain and those kinds of things? And does progress include trust in God?
This may be kind of a cliche thing to bring up, but I sometimes wonder if those that champion this type of progress have actually ever read Frankenstein. Like, the whole point of that book is to show that this mad pursuit of progress to eliminate death, to eliminate suffering, actually the monsters, and in the book quite literally the monster that is created, is worse than the problem. And so is there any sort of self-reflection related to, hey, our pursuit of utopia, our belief in progress, is it actually creating monsters in our culture, monstrous effects in our culture that are actually worse than the suffering that we include? And so my final comment, to bring up another pop culture reference, is the great line from the first Jurassic Park movie. Was it Jeff Goldblum, the chaos theory guy? He makes the comment that the scientists were so concerned about whether they could, they didn't stop and think whether they should. I think that's another piece too.
Wait, are you saying that literature isn't just for entertainment, but sometimes it actually is making a point about the world?
Hey,
that's fascinating. I thought Frankenstein was just a cool monster story,
no,
man. Whoa.
Frankenstein movie, Frankenstein book, not even close to the same thing. Frankenstein book, very, very
good. One of
the
most interesting and intelligent statements about humanity has been written in a long time.
The goal of this podcast is to equip our own church for discipleship and mission. So if you're a Christian or church leader in another context, we thank you for listening in. And we pray that the things that we've talked about might also be helpful to you as you minister in your own context. We'll talk to you again next Wednesday on the Wednesday Conversation.